Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is December 11th, 2015. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. And on today's show, we're going to debrief a little bit about an online course that we both participated in that was presented by the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And it was, I don't remember the exact title, but it was basically talking about the big masquerade ball in which we all think that we're participating. We're wearing masks, but somehow we have conveniently forgotten that we're wearing those masks and that this is all a big pretense. So we're going to be talking about that and referring you back to the Foundation. But while you're listening to the show today, I hope you'll join us in the 12radio.com private group on Facebook. And if you've never been there, the easiest way to find it is to go to the 12radio.com website. And on the left side of the page, you're going to see a column, and one of the links says chat. If you just click that chat link, you will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook, and you can just ask to join. And the guy at the door is Scott. He's our producer today. Welcome, Scott. Thank you for being here. And he's going to let you in. So please go over there, and you can be writing your comments and or asking questions. But thank you so much for being there, and let's get started. So welcome, Bruce. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you, CA.
It's great to be back.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and thank you so much. I mean, I had thanked Susan, too. Thanks so much for really prompting me, or I don't think you pushed me, but you certainly prompted me and encouraged me to look into these courses at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles.
They're really superb, aren't they? And
they are.
Earlier in the year, the technical factors were an issue, but that's long since been resolved, and now both the quality of the content, which has always been fabulous, and the technical aspects are wonderful. So anyone who's at least been interested in A Course in Miracles and an in-depth study and application of the course would do well to look into those on the facim.org website.
Right. And, you know, I mean, what really stopped me before, I wanted to go to Temecula. But when I really thought about the price of, you know, flying to California and, you know, getting the hotel and everything, it just kept me from going. And I guess I just thought that if I participated by streaming, that it would be difficult for me to just set aside that time to do it. But the way they've got it set up, you can actually sit and watch it live, or for several weeks afterwards, you can actually watch it because they'll send you links to re-see what they had videoed. And so it's sort of like, oh my gosh, why didn't I ever do this before? You know?
Well, a year ago it wasn't there. So now that people are aware of it, hopefully more people will participate and continue to support what they're doing, which is just superb.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited. I don't know when the next one is, so please make sure that I know.
Okay, yeah, there's another half-day one in December that it's Christmas-related. So.
Well, and do they video those smaller ones, those shorter ones?
I think they're doing it more and more with both live and streaming options on the website.
Good.
They have it set up, so if you go to the facm.org website and look on the Temecula schedule, it's kind of not obvious that's where the streaming content is and how you access it is from there. But if you look on the Temecula schedule link, that's where you'll find it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Want to discover where that's at.
Yeah, I need to get back over there and check that out because, like I said, to me, this was like such an incredible surprise.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, I mean, the quality is just like you're there and participating it's just superb. And the content, you sent me your notes, your transcription of notes from the class, and I was blown away with that. So,
thanks.
So yeah, you had I think really captured a lot of the tremendous material that was covered there, and like you say, it was really about all the masquerade. And I couldn't help but recall, and this is actually the theme that I chose last year, for that there's been two years in a row that MiracleShare.org has had a virtual conference for about Course Miracles, and with a couple dozen people in each of those two autumn conferences that they've had now. And the topic I chose for last year to talk about for half an hour was the inner and outer shields of oblivion. which is, I believe, in lesson, was it 136, I think it is, that's toward the bottom. It's mentioned. It's only mentioned once in the text, or in the workbook. Yeah, here it is. It's paragraph 5 of lesson 136. In the second sentence, it says, "But what you have forgot can be remembered, given willingness to reconsider the decision, which is doubly shielded by oblivion." And Ken Wapnick talks a lot about the double shield of oblivion in his audio programs and books and so forth. And Jeff gave at the Foundation in Temecula gave a really wonderful presentation on that. And I think we could share kind of the gist of it without, you know, giving away what he was doing for people, you know, to entice people to participate, as, you know, either in person or with the streaming. But he made a chart showing a whole bunch of really wonderful symbols that kind of represented the outer shield of oblivion. You know, he had sort of the Grim Reaper, an airplane, a snake, a tree, a cyclone, heart, baseball, spider, mushroom cloud, a book. I'm kind of looking at a little screen snap I take of it. A prescription symbol, you know, wheelchair, a walker, a bank, football, a cup of coffee, bunch of people. A cat and a scorpion, machine gun, you know, just stuff like that. So if any one of these, you know, a book, for example, it could have been the book that we're referring to, A Course in Miracles, or some other book, a family, you know, kind of silhouette. So any of these could be things that we make big deals out of and that was one of the frequently asked questions also on the FACIM website that I've been going through every day, picking, you know, two or three of those to read. The one that really grabbed me and stopped me in my tracks, you know, the last 24 hours or so, was talking about, you know, the ways in which we, you know, maintain our investment in the dream. And I'm going to paraphrase it because I had it and I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but it was something to the effect of the way that we keep ourselves stuck, and that the thing that the ego does not want us to remember is that if we don't make a big deal out of things, that liberates us to, you know, that's basically our decision-making mind saying, oh, I don't have to, you know, make this sinful, guilty, or wicked, or evil. It's just silly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just silly. And that's that. I think that was the whole point of what the three folks that gave the presentation at this last Academy class in Temecula were getting at, is that the outer shield of oblivion and, you know, is the outer masquerade, but the persona is just as much the mask. The self that we think we are, that's separate from anything or anyone else, is every bit as much the mask as the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, Jeff, one of the things I noticed that he had said that really, you know, it's sort of like this information, in some ways it's not new. I know I've heard it. I know I've read it, but it still just kind of stabs you in the heart. And it makes me realize, you still just don't get this. And that is when he's talking about us getting into all of these, you know, images and just taking them for real. And like you say, making them very serious. And he said, it's important to realize Jeff is not wearing a mask. Jeff is a mask.
Exactly.
And I went, you know, once again, I just kind of suck in my breath, because that's it. It's not that CA is wearing a mask. CA is the mask.
Right.
You know,
and Bruce is the mask, and anyone who's listening is the mask. And
right.
At least to the degree that we identify with a separate self. And like you say, that's exactly it. When we personalize it, when we bring it home and say, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I'm doing most of the time, then it can be an opportunity to look at our purpose for doing that, which is basically to keep the love that's addressed in the Course in Miracles, away, and to continue to, you know, essentially beat ourselves up for a crime we never committed.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, it's just silly. And, you know, over time, I think we let go of the need for, you know, self-condemnation and self-abuse in the form of the unconscious guilt, and by looking at it and seeing there's nothing there. And then the chart that was on the the board there showed basically how we shatter perfect oneness into these seemingly, you know, infinite number of little bits of, which we talked about in the last conversation we had about the mirror that was broken. The same idea. But it's really just basically from each one of those little splits, we think that there's, we now have made up this dualistic paradigm where we have this sort of dark mask that's the ego's trying to block out the sun, you know, which we can all do if we hold up our thumb, you know, on any day, any given
right.
And we can block out the sun and make it seem like it's not there just by putting our thumb in the air in the right spot, you know, and or the moon. And but it doesn't mean it's not there. It just means we've put a barrier. And that's, I think, where, you know, the initial comments of this workshop were, you know, it's the mask is a barrier. It's a shield. It's a facade. It's something that a dream that we hide behind because we don't want to see what's underneath. And what's underneath the inner shield of oblivion is the unconscious guilt. And so we have to use those external symbols, all the little, in the case of this workshop, they used all these little glyphs or icons of graphic silhouettes of things to depict different parts of our lives that we can relate to, even a Facebook icon, you know, for example.
Mm-hmm.
but anything that triggers us that we want to make a big deal out of becomes an opportunity for us to look at the ways in which we use the seemingly external things to mindlessly think that ideas can leave their source in the mind, and now that there's something outside there that I can be upset about, and be justified in my victimhood and martyrdom.
Yes.
it may sound, you know, extreme, but that's the nature of the ego, and it's relentless. It doesn't give up. It's very subtle in disguising it, and it basically creates just as many special love as special hate opportunities for us to look at, so that we can say, oh, well, I like this better than that. And so all those little specific icons that, you know, the paid actors in our mind script can take things that we prefer as well as the things we don't prefer, so that we can say and have our identity invested in. And then those things become the opportunities to look at, in some ways, even sneakier tactics of the ego to keep us from being peaceful by saying, oh, well, my happiness is going to depend on what this dream figure does or doesn't do, including the one that, you know, we see in the mirror. So, but yeah, a lot of, should we just start going through some of your notes?
Yeah, or okay. Wherever you want to go. I just want to say one more thing in terms of, kind of that realization, or kind of when it stops me in my tracks, like when you say CA is not wearing a mask, she is a mask, mm-hmm. Because you know what that puts me in touch with is how I think I'm really willing to let go of my personal identity. But when I hear something like that, I realize I'm not.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that puts me so in touch with the idea of what if you really are just a mask? You are not an individual person. And it starts putting me in touch with that.
Right.
And so that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, well, in truth it is. And that's where the only real lasting comfort, the peace that transcends anything that we can imagine here, that we have this longing for. And we all know that that's, that even if it's just a glimmer, we know that we can return to that on some level. We have that awareness that's our true home, and you know the world that we've made up here isn't, but we've populated with this incredibly diverse set of actors and characters that make, you know, take these iconic forms and archetypal images that then become just this incredibly, award-winning,
yeah.
Beyond award-winning, elaborate holographic movie dream that gives us just what the ego wants, you know, by default anyway, to keep us mindlessly, you know, zombie walking through the dream with our masks on. Yeah, I was actually kind of reminded of a really campy, funny, almost, you know, over the top, funny sci-fi film that I saw years ago called They Live. Did you ever see that one?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's really kind of a hoot. It's basically about this guy who stumbles on this pair of glasses that when he puts it on, he discovers that about, you know, I don't know, 20 or 30% of the people on the planet are actually these aliens that have these kind of hideous skeleton faces and that are including, you know, of course, you know, that when he puts it on, he sees. It works for TV shows as well, so he can see all the politicians that are really aliens that are trying to take over the world, and it was just funny, but the unmasking, though, you know, I it kind of reminded me of, well, what if we had a pair of glasses that allowed us to see ego? And of course, the movie metaphor only had this certain segment of the population, but of course, the course would suggest that there's that ego thought system that every seeming separate person, you know, animal, mineral, vegetable, galaxy, quark, whatever, has going for it or against it, and then the reality of what we all are that has nothing to do with the specific, what if we had this magical pair of glasses that could see beyond the masks of the facade and see the ego shenanigans for what it is, and instead of recoiling in terror, if we, you know, like the course suggests, again, kind of departing from that movie metaphor, if we were to look at it with our inner kindness teacher, with the Jesus of the course, or the Holy Spirit, as it describes it, we would see that there's nothing there behind the terror and the horrible image that the ego wants us to interpret as horrible. We would see that, no, we didn't throw God under the bus. God is fine and healthy and just as God always was. Thank you very much. And so there's no need for you to interpret that as a reflection of unconscious guilt. You know,
Yeah. And you know what it reminds me of? Something I've been thinking about recently is, you know, you're right. The course or the inner kindness teacher really is the glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the ability to do that, but this is what I've been really thinking about, and because here again, I get a little stuck on it when the course really says you're never going to see this with your human eyes.
Right.
And I'm like, why not? Why not? And it's like, because what, you know, the fantasy of the world or the dream of the world does not contain that. You've got to step outside of it.
Right.
It's not with human eyes that you're ever going to see that.
Exactly.
So can you just accept it's not with human eyes that you can see it. You've got to have another way to see. And it has to be something outside of the world. And in fact, Jeff had mentioned that several times, I think, during that first morning, is that it's, you know, you've got to get something outside of the world that's going to reflect truth back to you.
Right.
And we keep looking for it in the world.
Yep. Well, that's the whole strategy Einstein's famous quote of, you know, you're never going to solve the problem on the level that it was made. Well,
yes,
paraphrase, of course. But that's the ego strategy, is as long as we keep looking, you know, within the dream for an answer to what seemed to be our problems in the dream, you know, we're just playing right into the ego's hand and saying to ourselves, okay, I'd rather have to be right than happy. I'd rather have my problem the way I've set it up than to be willing to, like you say, step outside the dream, step outside the space-time idea, and see that, you know, there really nothing did happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's continued unabated, and we're just, you know, using a book or a person or a mechanism as a mechanism to reinforce the thought system we've chosen. One of those two.
Right. Well, and the other thing, you know, I guess I am jumping into the notes. One of the things he said that once again just really spoke to me is that an intellectual understanding in itself does not produce healing.
Right.
It is only the application of the forgiveness principles in our relationships that will heal. And I think that is so important because even on a metaphysical level, I remember years ago I was reading something and it had to do with past lives, or it had to do with a belief that, like, for instance, if you're afraid of snakes in this lifetime, it's because of something that happened before. And the person was putting forth the idea that if you could go back into those past lives, or if you could even just go into your psyche, something that happened to you as a child, and if you could intellectually understand it, then poof, it was gone. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's not true. I should rephrase that. That's not true for me. Uh-huh. I can understand. I mean, I do have a few of those things where I swear I think it was a past life or that was a childhood thing. It does not make the phobia or the fear go away. It helps me understand it, uh-huh. but it doesn't make it go away. So when he said that, I so resonated that. You know, and maybe I resonate with it because I'm cerebral, and it's like, okay, well, why can't I read this and just get it? Why do I need all these people? why do I have to be in relationship, and why do I have to change my relationships or think differently about my relationships? And it's because the intellectual understanding is never going to heal.
Right, right. And actually what you're saying brings up interesting points, and one of them is that it's what we choose and what we think is either helpful or harmful is really just something we've put into the script. I think the Course says something like it merely gives form to his desire kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the specifics that we have in our script that we call our life are there because we put them there, and they mirror back to us and reflect back to us which thought system, which teacher we've chosen moment to moment. And we can choose a different teacher. We can choose the classroom teacher rather than the prison teacher and say, oh yeah, I could use this to let go of my belief and differences and to dissolve the wall between myself and this other person or this, you know, animal or mineral, vegetable.
Right.
Trying to cover all the kingdoms here. Yeah. But, you know, because there are all these little icons in the chart there.
Well, that's right. All of them. And just, you know, that was a great chart. And just realizing that that's it. It's all of them.
Yeah.
You know, we separate and go, oh, this is good, that's bad. But they're all part of the illusion.
Right.
They're just all one way that we project it.
Yep.
So what else really stood out to you?
Oh, gosh. There was one in particular just in these bullet points on that same page you just read from, the world is seductive. Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point of it is to suck us in and keep us mindless, you know, to keep us, from putting on the glasses of the, to refer back to that silly movie, the They Live one. But the another one right just below that, it's not the body that suffers, it's the mind. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge one there because we think that it's our, in massive role-playing identification with this physical form. And, you know, we walk up to a bathroom mirror and wow, that's got to be me because, you know, I don't see someone else there typically,
right.
You know, and someone else doesn't see me typically. So, you know, there must be this one-to-one correlation between all these little separate fragmented mirror parts. And because that's so consistent in our mind, we assume that, well, that's got to be my real self. Well, not.
Right.
But that body identification, and I like how Ken Wapnick, you know, in so many ways reminded us that, you know, we fine-tuned and honed this need machine to the point where, it, you know, the least little slight, both physically or emotionally or mentally, seems to cause us to suffer, you know, but it's the mind that's suffering. It's not the form, and it's not the personality. It's really the decision in the mind for the belief in separation that is where the source of the suffering comes from.
Yeah, which goes right back to workbook lesson number 5. I'm never upset for the reason I think.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to go, yeah, well, if just I didn't have this cut, if I just didn't have this, you know, whatever it is I'm treating, you know, if only my body was better, then my life would be better. And it's hard for us to believe that that's not true. I mean, we want to invest our unhappiness or our discontent into something, you know, that we can see, that we can feel, that we can think about. We don't want to believe that it's something else.
Right.
You know?
It's my blood sugar, or that wasn't
right.
Gluten-free, or didn't have the right mix of ingredients, or I didn't get the treatment I needed, or you know, yada, yada, yada. It goes on.
Right.
And it'd be silly to, you know, to intentionally deprive yourself or someone else of what, you know, according to each person's belief system, would be helpful and kind. But at the same time, if you can just watch with a more and more amused awareness the moments when you catch yourself identifying with that and saying, oh, this is what's making me happy. And then you say, oh, there's that little icon, you know, it's that little symbol that I'm making a big deal out of. And that's now becoming the trigger or the cause of my identity. I'm projecting outward what's never left its source in my mind, an idea that something else can, there's an else thing, whatever that else thing is, fill in the blanks, that now has control over me and I'm at the mercy of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the real mercy is taking that control back inside and being merciful with ourselves by seeing that it had no effect.
Right.
The self that you described, this outside of space and time and outside the dream, joyously and peacefully without interruption has kept that awareness of perfect innocence and perfect peace intact throughout all our seeming diversions and excursions from it.
Right. Well, and in fact, so often I think of it as we're playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I would also go back and say, you know, if there is anything wrong, if we are in pain or there's something going on, we ought to treat it. You know, we ought to take the aspirin or we ought to feed ourselves when we're hungry.
Right.
And in the same ways, if we're playing Monopoly and we've agreed to play, we might as well play by the rules.
Right.
And we might as well try to get as many good hotels as we can, right? But if we could step back and go, yeah, this, I'm playing this little game and I'm playing by the rules, but it's not me, and it is just a game I'm playing. I'm not going to get confused and think that I really do live at Boardwalk, you know, or whatever it is.
Yep, yep.
But easier said than done, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just another bullet point or two down in your superb notes, by the way. The ego does not want us to recognize the mask or understanding we are hiding or concealing something. And there's that theme again of the masquerade. And I was thinking that's kind of analogous to the levels of dreaming in the movie Inception. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're basically, uh-huh. you know, we mask it. And if that mask doesn't work, well, let's make another mask. Let's go deeper. Let's make another dream within a dream. Let's continue to fragment and divide and obfuscate and conceal. And that's the whole ego strategy. It's like, well, if you've broken through that shield, let's, you know, instantaneously make another one to take its place, and we'll change it enough so where, oh, this one's different. So you haven't dealt with this before. This is a different problem.
Right.
Well,
right.
No,
a different
the
problem.
Course, the Course tells us to generalize and say it's all the same problem. It's all the choice in the mind. Ultimately, for the thought system of sin, guilt, and fear, and the belief in separation, the belief that we shattered perfect oneness and that we messed up God and threw him under the bus, you know, ripped him off the throne and seated ourselves there. And it's like, no, it didn't happen.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but you know, just kind of, it was an interesting experience also doing this class remotely and sitting in my office and watching it on a screen. Because even though I know this about myself when I'm in person, there were a couple times when I would find all of a sudden I would just want to stand up and walk out of the room.
Uh-huh.
And I went, what are you doing? And I realized part of that's resistance.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
And I was barely even conscious of it is I want to get away from this. This is almost too much. I just need to shut this down. But I didn't because I just said, okay, what are you doing? Sit back down. You know,
uh-huh.
No, you don't need a drink. You don't need another cup of coffee. You know, just sit back down. And, you know, and I thought how often we do that in life.
Oh, yeah.
And you know,
oh,
but
yeah.
Also just recognizing, yeah, it's getting a little too close to the truth here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but recognizing that my body automatically said, oh, I can get me out of here quick. You know,
right? Yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
That was kind of a funny thing to just watch myself.
Oh, that's a really important point, and I appreciate you bringing it up, Sia, because I mean, the ego is the ultimate fidgety, you know, nervous, furtive, get me out of here thought system, you know, because it basically knows that if it's exposed to, if its mask is unveiled, and which is what you know, exposing ourselves to these seemingly external reminders that of the truth of what we are, you know, that gets pretty hot and heavy and challenging, you know, just like, you know, take my hand off this burner, please, you know.
Yeah.
because the ego does not want, you know, the self that we've so deeply invested in is not going to give up without a fight. I mean, it's, you know, I love the phrase in the text somewhere where it says, you know, you've already threatened the ego's thought system far too great for it to continue to pretend that it's your friend.
Yeah.
You know, the kid gloves are off now. And now we really see that, you know, in those moments when we're just kind of more passively or, you know, marginally, you know, aware of the truth of what we are, you know, that the ego is suspicious. But when we take a solid look at the ego's insanity and the silliness of it, it's like, okay, I'm disabled. And that's when, you know, that aspect of the seeming self that we think we are goes into, you know, all no holds barred. Let's, you know, pull out all the stops and, you know, take it to red alert and fire all the, you know, type in all the nuclear codes and launch everything, you know, and that's basically the, you know, what happens. And I certainly can relate to what you just said of, you know, wanting to leave the room. And, you know, for me, this last week and a half, I've had just a constant stream of interruptions to where I've actually only seen a small portion of the videos and I believe I will be able to watch all of them while they're still available. But it's just fascinating to watch how we seem to use external agents, as well as, you know, our own decision for let me check on this, you know, those kind of thoughts to distract ourselves when it gets too close to home, like you say. And that's okay. It's okay, because the beauty is that the comfort and the peace that awaits us is so wonderful and so far beyond anything that we can imagine, that we don't need to worry about it. We're not going to flunk the course. We're already home. We're just, you know, procrastinating. We're playing hooky from our classroom and procrastinating and making big deals out of things just long enough to avoid, you know, going outside our comfort zone and, you know, or what we think is our comfort zone. But like you say, sometimes it helps too to just, you know, sit yourself back down and say, okay, I'm going to check this out. And watch the ego squirm a little bit, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I've really felt that. And I mean, that's one thing, whenever I dive really deeply into the course or do something that really focuses my attention, what happens to me, I notice I start having a lot of cognitive dissonance.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. And I just came up, that thought, that phrase came to my mind just the other day, just in the same context. Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I've noticed in the last few weeks after really, you know, sitting there for several days and listening to this nonstop. Mm-hmm. And, but once again, you know, I talked to a couple of friends about it and they kind of just like bring me back in, because what they, you know, what I realized I was doing is I was saying, you know what, it's all of a sudden I'm feeling like some things in my life are just meaningless and blah, blah, blah. And both of them kind of said, oh, so one thing in the illusion has more importance or meaning than something else. And I was like, yeah, I guess it does.
Gotcha.
And,
you know,
and so once again, it doesn't mean that what you do in life isn't important and that you can just go, okay, well, I might as well just go out and, you know, murder somebody.
Do
it's
whatever,
not
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
but sure. See, I was starting to believe that there really were, there's a hierarchy of illusions.
Yeah.
And that one is better than another. And, you know, and I do constantly do that. In fact, I've told you the example, and Mark Husson, I just love Mark Husson. He, one time when I was really upset about something going on in my illusion, and I was going on and on and on about it and why these people were doing this, and if they would just stop doing that, I would not be upset. And he said, well, what makes you think your version of reality is any more real than theirs? And that stopped me. And he basically last week said something similar. You know, he goes, once again, you're really believing that one level of the illusion is higher or lower or better or whatever than something else. And he goes, all you really need to do is look at whatever is going on and choose a different teacher.
Yeah.
It's not about changing the, he goes, I think you're still trying to change the illusion.
Yep. Oh,
And I'm
yeah.
like, well, of
We all
course
do.
I am, you know?
Yeah, we all do too. My chair on the holodeck is nicer than your chair.
Right. And you know, why can't you guys get with the program?
Yeah.
And you know, but it's also funny because in this, you know, Jeff even said it doesn't matter how many people you can get to agree with you.
Right.
You know, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm kind of going, okay, I'm having all this cognitive dissonance, and I wanted somebody to come along and go, well, yeah, because you're doing it right and those people are doing it wrong, or yeah, you ought to be doing blah, blah, blah. And neither of them did it. Both of them kind of just said, you know, what does it matter? You're looking for, why are you focusing on differences? Why are you
Yeah, and
focusing on
that's
differences?
the cognitive dissonance brings up a good point too, because it basically, says that we can actually turn it around and use the very symbols that the ego made, all these little archetypal iconic figures that populate our waking, seemingly waking dream,
Yeah.
and use them instead for our classroom of forgiveness and say, oh, yeah, I can see what you're saying and see that you are actually all of spirit. You're a representative of that for me, and kind of echoing Mark's comment, and I can now use that information to remind me that I have a choice, that I can see you as equally my savior as everyone else, moment to
Right.
moment. And when that brings this tremendous non-dual gratitude, which kind of ties into a previous conversation, but it really applies throughout the year that we can look at with gratitude at everyone that enters our life and see, you can either be an emissary for another one I have highlighted here in your notes, the evil, darkness, and sin that I think I am the home of, or you can be a representative for the opposite, which in truth has no opposite.
Right. Now, why was cognitive dissonance coming up for you? What made you think of
Oh,
that?
I just well, I think a lot of it, was just like you say, that watching the program and realizing how much resistance I have to maintaining that awareness that and Ken Wapnick pointed it out beautifully in a lot of the workshops that he did. He would say, there's this imaginary vacuum over the threshold, over the of the door jamb, that sucks out the awareness of everything we've talked about in the room as you leave for lunch or dinner or whatever,
Ah.
and I think that's true. I had a another teacher named Charlie Tart. I was taking some classes at University of California, Davis years ago, and Gurdjieff and altered states of consciousness and some of the stuff that he specialized in. And one of the exercises that we were studying, Gurdjieff's mindfulness exercises, was to just pay attention every time you walk through the door for a week. And that was our classroom assignment for that week. And it was fascinating to see how many hundreds of times during a week you would go through a doorway of one kind or another and totally forget the exercise. And then, so he comes back the next week and asks all the classroom, how many times did you remember that and be conscious of the fact that you were going through a door? There was, the more honest of us, would raise our hand in the not very much category.
Right.
Like maybe it lasted 5 or 10 minutes, and then after that, or if that, but it's because we're so busy investing our identity in the dream figures and making big deals out of stuff that is a dream and making the illusion real, because we want to make it real. It's purposive. It keeps us anchored in a self-abusive paradigm. And of course, when that's pointed out to us, it pisses off our ego even further. So how dare you suggest that I want to be miserable?
Right. Well, and I love what you were just saying about Ken saying there's a massive vacuum that literally sucks out the understanding.
It's a metaphor,
Or,
of course.
yeah. Well, you know what I like about it, and I've mentioned this before, I don't know if on this show, but years ago, one of the, I would say some of the first metaphysical stuff or spiritual stuff that I was reading in the 80s, I believe, was Emmanuel's book. And in that, and I still to this day love those books. But One of the things that happened is it was question and answer participation in the audience. And a woman said, well, you know, I've got this going and I've got this going and how do I get all this stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so Emmanuel basically says, okay, well, what you're asking is how do you stay your divine presence when you're running the kids to school or making their lunches? And he said, so if you're asking me, is that what an angel does or is that what a divine presence does? Well, apparently they do. Now, I'm just paraphrasing, but the idea was and that the woman is going, okay, well, you know, I do my meditation in the morning, but once my meditation is over, then I can't be that divine presence the rest of the day because I'm busy with stuff. And I thought, boy, if that isn't, you know, that's how it is for me. I mean, like even, you know, just going through the door jam, I love that analogy. I'm really going to use that visual because that's kind of what I did, you know, or do. It's like, okay, I've studied my Course in Miracles or I've done my lesson for the day and now I'm closing the book and I'm getting on with my real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Or it's really, it's no different really than well, I've gone to church on Sunday and I got religion and you know, for an hour or two and now I'm good and I don't have to think about it for the rest of the week kind of thing. But that's you know, the idea is that we can use that to remind ourselves. And one of the things in the Ken's Journey Through the Workbook that I thought found really helpful was to be kind with ourselves when we find these, you know, momentary or epochal, I think that's the right adjective, you know, massively long lapses in our mindfulness where we just, you know, like you say, go along, you know, not so merrily trying to fix the dream and, you know, tilting all the windmills and, you know, making the fabric of an illusion, you know, prettier and all those cosmetic treatments that we give the facade and then the masquerade, you know. But when we catch ourselves to not beat ourselves up, to just say, okay, oh yeah, okay. So, you know, for 5 seconds or 5 days or, you know, 5 years or whatever, you know, I got back into this you know, crazy thought system. But I can forgive myself because nothing happened.
Right.
During those times, you know, kind of like that proverbial, you know, the thing about the two sets of footsteps on the beach, you know, thing, you know, during those moments when we were off busy, you know, fighting our imaginary dragons, you know, there's the second set of footsteps disappeared from the beach because, you know, the Holy Spirit basically has our back, you know, no matter what. And when we have these lapses in mindfulness, it's not like the reality of what we are goes away. It's just that during those moments, we've chosen to believe in a silly idea that we're the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And we have to somehow, you know, in this dream, combat those things and, you know, put on our suits of armor and our masks and deal with those forces on that level. Forgetting, of course, that they're all projection, but that's okay. You know, it's no more harmful to what we really are than kids in a sandbox or people going to see a movie and getting all, you know, worked up about what happened on the screen. You know,
right, yeah. Right. Which is, of course, that's another analogy that I just love.
Yeah.
You know, because we do. We buy right into it. In fact, it's not really a good movie if we're not buying into it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If we're constantly aware that we're watching a movie. You know, in fact, I've had that experience, too, where I'll be watching television and almost, I mean, it is almost unconscious. All of a sudden, I'll find I'm in another room in the house mm-hmm. because I thought of something and I got up and I said, weren't you watching something? And all of a sudden I realized you must not have been very into it because you were so distracted, you literally walked away from it.
So the TV's saying, she's just not that into you, huh?
No, she's just not that into you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we get very invested in these movies that we're making up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's, I think, a really helpful thing is to look at all these little symbols that we think are telling us that, you know, they're really just masks, you know, hired gun masks that we've invested in that, you know, they're on our payroll, our inner payroll to remind us that you have problems and you need to invest your identity here in order to solve them. Well, no, but that's the underlying propaganda is, you know, as long as your identity is invested in this separate self and is, you know, the me first, unshared interest, you know, separate interest thing. Then the ego is like, oh, whew, I can relax, you know. Well, it's never really relaxed because it's the other, you know, the sword of Damocles is always hanging. The other foot's always going to drop. The Monty Python squish is going to happen, and you know, ultimately, but only in the dream, you know. And that's the beauty of what this curriculum suggests is that, you know, the things, good things and bad things, will seem to happen to us. But whether it's a special love or a special hate fascination, it hasn't touched what we really are. It's just a mask. It's just a facade over a reality that's you know, unscathable.
Right, untouchable.
Untouchable, yeah.
Oof. If only we could get that. Although, once again, kind of really touting this class with the Course in Miracles. And I mean, I know it's already over. You know, the foundation has already offered it. But I'm sure they'll do a number of things in the future and maybe use similar graphics. You know, it's helpful when we see the graphics. I mean, it's like talking about just those words, the double shield of oblivion. Mm-hmm. Well, show me what that looks like. And it's so much easier when I say, oh, well, you see this black circle, and then you see all these icons that are covering part of it, and then you see how that black circle covers up this, you know, all of a sudden I go, oh, okay, I'm kind of getting it. I'm a very visual person. And so I would really encourage people, if you're interested in exploring this in different ways, thanks for listening to this radio show, and thanks for making, you know, A Course in Miracles part of your life. Yeah. But check out the Foundation for A Course in Miracles and some of these streaming classes if you don't happen to live in Temecula, California.
Right. Yes. And right? They're just wonderful. And like you say, they're an incredible bargain, and the content is superb. They're, the staff there has very much picked up right, you know, totally, you know, without missing a beat, basically, from what Ken Wapnick's life was all about and his teachings, and picks up and run with it, and off they go, and continuing on very beautifully with that same message of non-duality and kindness and shared interests and that curriculum that is our real classroom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was going to say, I had never met any of these people before. So when I watched this streaming class, it was my first exposure really to them, you know, to be able to just see them. And I kind of noticed, I thought, you can tell they spent years with Ken.
Absolutely.
You can really see it and feel it in the way they talk.
Yep.
And which is a very nice thing to just have that extension, you know, of Ken and people that are living the course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what other announcements maybe do you have or encouragements that you want to leave the audience with today?
Oh, okay. Well, I always have fun posting things of interest, including, you know, examples of our conversations and similar ones on acimblog.com. And also encourage people to check out the Foundation for Inner Peace site, which is undergoing an overhaul that I get to help with a little bit and in process. And that is the acim.org, which is the sister site to facim.org. And the resources on those two sites alone are just phenomenal. And there's, if you just, you know, look for Ken Wapnick's work, and there's so many other wonderful things on the web and online that people can avail themselves with, as well as, you know, local study groups. I attend three or four myself every week, most of them online now. But
you've got a lot of courage. Well, you do.
courage or just, I don't know, but I find them helpful because of the very thing we've been talking about, is that vacuum over the door effect of realizing, you know, I can seem to have it all figured out. And then, you know, it's just like gets sucked out of the way. And you know, it's not so much that I get really deeply invested in, you know, vengeance and that sort of thing, but I'm realizing that even just the slightest irritation, like the Course says, and, you know, the miracle principle number one, you know, the no order of difficulties, that even just the slightest annoyance or upset is really no different than the thought of murder. And that's why, that could be another announcement. I have also on ACIM blog, I put together a year ago, a recovering bliss ninny calendar, which I just updated, and I have a link to it there. And if anybody wants, you know, some of the more challenging quotes from the course to look at for a year, that you might find that a fun thing to, you know, again, to, and I need these constant reminders, you know, things that when I glance at things. And that's why I always have something course related on you know, one of my computer screens at any given moment. So it's like if I look at that and say, oh yeah, that's right, I could be mindful and I could remember the thought system of shared interests and you know, not making a big deal out of my seemingly separate self and remember to gently laugh at my investment in it. So.
Well, that's right. And you know what? I'm going to take that analogy of the door jam, though. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, I'm going to just see how many times I can pass through a door and say, instead of a massive vacuum sucking it out, that every time I pass through this door, I remember who I am.
Perfect. Perfect.
You know, and remember to do that.
Love that. That's a great idea. And to add to Charlie Tart's exercise, just as you've already started to do, we could also say, and forgive myself when I remember that I forgot.
Yes, I love
and
that.
Be gentle with ourselves and say, oh, how silly. I must have not wanted the peace of God, you know, in terms of, you know, that reflection of in that exercise kind of thing. So
that's right. I love that. I really do. I absolutely love that. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. And we just barely scratched the surface as we were talking about earlier, because your copious notes, again, we're just a fraction of, which were wonderful, we're just a fraction of the incredible content in the FACIM. .org workshop that we.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thanks so much for being here. And I want to thank all the listeners and everybody in the chat room. And remember that you can find Bruce and links to a number of the things that he just talked about at www.acimblog.com. That's where you can find Bruce. And remember, you can always find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, where we discuss astrology. You can also find me on 1-2-listen.com and teaching classes on 1-2 Academy. But for today, I want you to just sit tight. You can always grab another cup of coffee or tea, because I want you to be back here in time for the Through Line with Christine DeMaurier, our next live show coming up on Fabulous Fridays on 1-2 Radio. And until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and the masks that you wear.